The Fred Allen Show. Brought to you by Pana Toothpaste for the smile of beauty, Sal Hepatica for the smile of health. An hour of smiles with Fred Allen, folks. 3,600 seconds of fun and music. Fun with our star comedian, Fred Allen. With our guest star, Bob Benchley. Music with Peter Van Steeden, the Merry Man, and Wynn Murray. The time has come. It's the Fred Allen Show. The curtain goes up, Peter raises his baton for overture, and it's good morning. Ladies and gentlemen, is a young man who has just caught 1939 under the mistletoe and is preparing to kiss the old year goodbye. Here he is, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Harry, how did you enjoy your Christmas? Did you make the welkin ring again this
year?
Yes,
sir, Fred.
Enjoyed yourself, huh?
Oh, say, I've had high old times at Christmas, Fred. Yeah. But I think the high old time I had this Christmas was higher than any high old times I ever had. Oh. And I've had some high old times.
You had a high old time.
Yes, sir.
Well, did you hang up your stocking this year?
Oh, you bet, Fred.
What happened?
Oh, nothing. I just put it back on again in the morning.
Hey, you're lucky. I put my stocking back on and stepped in 3 jelly beans. I had to send the stocking over to Schraff's to get it laundered, Harry.
Well, that's the best... Fred, I'm sorry. I forgot. Thanks a lot for your present. That turkey stuffing.
Oh, the turkey? You got the turkey stuffing. How was it? How was it, Harry? How did it taste?
Well, that I can't say, Fred. The zipper on the turkey got stuck, and we had to nibble around the outside. We couldn't get the turkey open.
Oh, isn't that a shame?
A merry December 27th, folks.
Hey, what?
You can't tell what'll happen.
Well, what is... Somebody should put a weather strip on that door. Things are creeping in here when you don't... What is that, a merry December 27th? Are you making your own holidays, Mr. Van Steeden?
No, but I didn't see you fellas Christmas.
Well, that's all right, Pete.
All right,
did you have a good Christmas, Harry?
Oh, I had a high old time, Pete.
He's had high old times with the high old time. He got altitude with this last high old time. But what? From his looks, I don't think he's grounded yet, as a matter of fact. What sort of a day did you have, Mr. Van Steeden?
I was going all day.
Okay.
Christmas carols, community sings, solos around in people's backyards.
Oh, gee, Chris, you spent the whole day singing, Pete?
I must have sung After La Bulbula Mare 200 times, Harry.
After La Bulbula?
Well, what kind of a carol is that? What has Abdul the Bulbul Amir got to do with Christmas?
Abdul's a Turk.
Yeah.
Turks come from Turkey, and Turkey goes with Christmas.
Well, I can't stay with that.
I'll join you outside as soon as I wind this up. What did you sing for an encore? Cranberry Me Not on the Lone Prairie?
Okay, Alan, just for that, here's your loaf of bread, thanks.
Thanks.
What's that?
Alan gave me a loaf of bread for Christmas.
A loaf of bread?
He said if somebody gave me an electric toaster for Christmas, I'd be sitting pretty.
Well, just because you didn't get the toaster, you don't have to give me this bread back, Van Steeden. I don't.
A crumb will feel more at home with a loaf of bread than I will.
He who tells a joke and runs away will live to tell a joke some other day. And he who has the last laugh in radio is but a music cue, Mr. Van Steeden. And with this sage rejoinder, left over from Harry's turkey stuffing, we turn to the latest news of the week. The IPANA News presents The World in Review. New York York City, New York. Selznick International production of Gone with the Wind, the motion picture eagerly awaited by millions who read the book, has triumphant opening in New York City. Celebrities involved in making a picture are acclaimed by press and public. IPANA News interviews some of the little fellows whose names didn't come up at the opening, but whose activities made Gone with the Wind possible. First, Mr. Mervyn Nod. What about this sensational picture, Mr. Nod?
Why, if it wasn't for me, Gone with the Wind would never have been made.
Well, I didn't see your name among the screen credits. Mr. Selznick produced the picture, didn't he?
Yes.
Victor Fleming directed it.
Yes.
Max Steiner wrote the music.
Yes.
Walter Plunkett designed the costume.
Yes.
And still you...
Yes. I maintain that the man who really started the ball rolling was little old yours truly, Mervyn Nod.
You?
Yes. I, Mervyn Nod, said the one word that made the picture possible.
Well, how did it happen?
Well, it was 3 years ago in March. Mr. Selznick buzzed for me.
You flew to his office?
Yes.
And?
Mr. Selznick was reading the last page of a book. I stood at attention. Mr. Selznick finished reading. He put the book on his desk. He raised his eyes to mine.
And said?
Mervyn, he said, this book will make a great picture. I met his glance. I said, yes.
That is what started Gone with the Wind?
Yes.
If you had said no that morning, what would have happened?
I'd have been fired. I'm a yes man.
Aren't we all? And
yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mervyn.
Yes.
Yes and yes to you. The man at the studio who had the most trouble with the picture was a gentleman named Humphrey Dill. Mr. Dill.
I've been 30 years in the picture game and I never seen nothing like I've been through on Gone with the Wind.
Well, what is it you do at the studio, Mr. Dill?
I'm the adjective man.
The adjective man?
Yeah. When a producer finishes a picture, he turns in the details to me.
Oh, and you?
I make up an adjective to fit the picture.
Well, I still don't.
Look, I'll explain it.
Oh, all right.
Supposing the studio finishes a picture called Chaos Over Potsdam.
Yeah.
The producer gives me the details. I see it ain't colossal. I see there ain't no adjective to describe Chaos Over Potsdam.
What do you do?
I use a word like significant. This picture is significant. You can take it either way.
Oh, I see. But about Gone with the Wind.
Well, Mr. Selznick, give me the details.
They were stupendous.
It's the biggest thing to come out of Hollywood. So I start going through my adjectives.
And?
I ain't got an adjective in my repertoire big enough to fit it.
What about colossal?
Colossal, titanic, mammoth, brobdignagian, cyclopean. For the first time in my life, they won't do.
So?
So I started compounding adjectives. Like titan, gigantuan.
Yeah.
Super, super colossic.
Yeah.
Glamanificent.
Those are pretty big words.
Not big enough for this picture. I seen it was futile. I dismantled the adjectives I was working on.
And gave up?
I had to. The picture's too big for white.
And Gone with the Wind has been released without an adjective?
I'm just calling it a long picture, mister.
A masterpiece of understatement, and thank you, Mr. Humphrey Dill. An actress who almost played the part of Scarlet in Gone with the Wind is Miss Stephanie Culpepper. How did you miss out on the Scarlet part, Miss Culpepper?
I was too thorough, sugar.
Too thorough?
I sure enough was. I got too deep into the character. That was my undoing.
What happened?
Well, back in 1935, the studio called me for a test. I thought they were just auditioning draws.
Oh, I see.
I met the director, Mr. Somebody. He says, honey, your draw is dragging. If you can act like you can draw, he said, the part is yours.
And you did a scene from the picture?
With the camera right there.
Oh, and what was the trouble?
I was too thorough.
Well, how do you mean, Miss Culpepper?
Well, the director said, play Scarlet as a green kid.
Yes.
Your future looks black, and you're feeling blue.
Yes.
Lose your courage and turn yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Then steel yourself and show you're in the pink.
A complicated bit of acting, I must say.
Yes. Scarlet was green, black, blue, yellow, and pink. That's the way I played her, but I was too thorough.
How do you mean?
Well, the test was in Technicolor. I come out plaid.
Oh. Condolences, and thank you, Miss Stephanie Culpepper. The only boner found in the entire picture was traced to one Mr. Belclair Scriven. How did this boner possibly creep in, Mr. Scriven?
It was my fault. It was a fatal literary lapse.
Oh, a literary... Oh, did you write the picture scenario?
Me? Why, one man couldn't write Gone with the Wind. It was a creative project.
Really? Well, how was the picture written?
60 workers, writers, working day and night and 12-hour shifts.
You don't say.
Yes, I do. The script passed along on an assembly line.
Yes.
Hack writers put in verbs and conjunctions.
Yes.
Literary big shots voted on sentences. The chap who did whole paragraphs was a Jersey man.
And your task was?
I was a suffix clincher.
Oh, you just added the suffixes.
Yes, for instance, if the word child passed me on the assembly belt, I would add hood. Childhood.
Yes.
Sweet, I'd add net.
Sweetness.
Nut, I'd add ing.
The word nut.
Don't mean a thing if it ain't got that ing.
But about this single boner and Gone with the Wind.
It is a missing suffix. It was my fatal lapse.
How did it happen?
I had been working 27 days and nights without sleeping. I was suffix happy.
I can imagine.
We were coming into that scene where Scarlet meets Red for the first time. I was sitting at the assembly belt. I started nodding.
Yes.
Butt came by, I added the lure. Butler.
Yes.
Scar came by, I added the left. Scarlet.
Yes.
Then she spoke, and I must have dozed off.
You missed the suffix?
I did, yes. Scarlet said hello. I didn't add the O.
And when Scarlet greets Rhett in the picture today...
It's a bugle call.
I see. And what picture are you working on now, Mr. Scriven?
I am not with MGM at the moment.
Well, where will a letter reach you?
Care of the menswear in Macy's basement.
And still you're no bargain, Mr. Belclair Scriven. And now the Ipana News brings you a digest version of the masterpiece Gone with the Wind, running to 1,037 pages in book form, lasting 3 hours and 45 minutes on the screen. Gone with the Wind is here, through the miracle of radio, given to you in 3 seconds, presenting our condensation of Gone with the Wind. The gun with the wind. Thank you. Thank you. We have some fife players in here, Jerry. And now as long as the drum corps doesn't show up, we're all right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Merry Mags, who have picked up a sideline and are singing at the Paramount Theater this week, close in on our microphone to render Santa Claus's theme song, Jingle Bells.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, and laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. It was a day or two ago, I thought I'd take a ride. Soon I had Miss Penny Bride seated by my side. And misfortune seemed his lot. He ran the sleigh to a distant bank, and we got upset. Jingle, 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 jingle all the way, all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle, jingle, jingle bells, jingle all the way, all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Now the ground is white.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, since we are still knee-deep in the holiday season, this is a good time.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Now we'll have a little more Merry Christmas and a big dash, a Happy New Year. Personally, I'd like a little Arbor Day for a change.
What's the trouble, chum, if I may call you chum?
Oh, no trouble at all, only I don't like holidays.
Oh, come now, not even this in-between time?
Especially this in-between time. The more I think of the presents I got, the madder I get.
Really?
Some neckties that had come in handy if you had a flag of trash. She pardoned me. Some cigars that are guaranteed to rid the house of termites, and a lot of bills that'll take me to scream.
Don't look now, but I'm getting a cold for New Year's, so maybe you've noticed.
Well, if Fred didn't, I did, chum. Chum. Seriously, I can tell you what to do for your cold. Take Sal Hepatica to help fight that cold faster. And to substantiate that statement, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to pass along the results of a recent impartial survey among physicians conducted by leading medical journals. In this survey, it was found that 7 out of 10 physicians prescribe a saline laxative when treating a cold. And Sal Hepatica is, we believe, the outstanding saline laxative in America. There are 2 very good reasons for this, which you can check with your own doctor. First,
Sal Hepatica acts quickly, yet it is exceptionally gentle.
And remember, since the progress of a cold is quick, this greater speed of Sal Hepatica is especially important in fighting it. Second,
Sal Hepatica also helps nature counteract the acidity that so often accompanies a cold.
So you see, Sal Hepatica helps in 2 ways, and helps faster. Get an economical bottle of Sal Hepatica from your druggist before another day goes by. Then, whenever a cold threatens, just take 2 teaspoonfuls of Sal Hepatica in a glass of water. Help nature get you through the new year with less time out for colds with gentle, quick-acting Sal Hepatica.
Van Steeden and his Ipana Ickies have just played, given us the Reader's Digest version of It Had to Be You. And now, ladies and gentlemen, before we present our guest star...
Mr. Allen! Yeah.
Oh, yes, Portland.
Mama sent this back.
Sent what? Oh, what's this little box?
It's that perfume you gave Mama for Christmas.
Oh, doesn't your mother like perfume?
Yes, but Mama said this kind was for throwing, not using.
What does your mother mean, throwing?
Mama said this perfume is generally put up in little glass bottles instead of in bottles.
Did your mother try it?
Yes. Mama put some on her dress.
And?
3 moths came out of her skirt and gave themselves up.
What do you know?
Then Mama got too near the candles on the Christmas tree.
And?
Her left sleeve exploded.
Nothing else happened, I hope.
Well, not till Mama rubbed some of the perfume behind her ears.
And then what happened?
Mama's right ear came off in her hand.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
That's what Mama said when her other ear came off.
Your mother said what?
It's ridiculous.
Why, now, wait a minute. This whole thing is getting ridiculous. Who is our guest star tonight?
Well, all of the other programs are having guest experts sum up the old year and predict for 1940.
Oh, and don't tell me that you have dug up a whimsy expert for us.
Yes, he's America's foremost authority on wit and humor.
To wit?
Mr. Robert Benchley.
Thank you.
Well, good evening, Mr. Benchley.
Yes, as evenings go, I'd say it is a good evening, Fred. That is up to now. The thing that worries me is what happens from now on.
Why, we could have had the censor up to clear your throat, you know. Everything else was...
I could have sworn that wasn't it.
We had everything else cleared but your throat for the program. Well, you all ready?
Oh, I guess as ready as I will be.
I know, when the frog's away, the man. Well, the purpose of this meeting is to dissect humor and the professional humorist. Now, tonight, Mr. Benchley, you are the guinea pig.
Well, it's a character part for me, Fred, but I'll do the best I can. A guinea pig. Gosh, I wish you'd told me how to come in tails.
That joke isn't a sample of your humor, Mr. Benchley.
No, Fred, I was just feeling out the audience. That joke was sort of a throwaway, you know?
Well, it's too bad you didn't throw it away before you got in here.
I'll know better next time, if there is a next time. Well, as Robespierre said on the steps of the guillotine, tout comprendre et tout pardonner.
What does that mean, Mr. Benchley?
What?
I said, what does that say to, whatever that was, what does it mean?
Well, it loses so much in the translation, Fred. Why bother?
Fine. Well, we'll get right into our interview.
All right. I'm still the guinea pig.
If you don't mind.
No, not at all. I just wanted to make sure. If I'm supposed to be a guinea pig and play it as a mongoose, it's going to sound rather confusing.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's all I've got to say.
Oh, you must have more to say than that, Mr. Benchley.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. What I meant was that's all I've got to say on this page. I'm turning now.
Oh. Considerate of you, Mr. Benchley, I'm sure.
Oh, that's all right. May I trouble you to wet my finger, please?
Well, not at all. Pardon my tongue.
Certainly. Pardon my finger. there we are. I've turned.
Fine. Now, tell me, is it true that you are America's foremost authority on wit and humor?
Well, I don't like to come right out and say it, Fred, but I'm not the one to make it unanimous either. But millions of people are saying it, and where there's so much smoke, there must be some fire.
Yes, I'll say. Now, how did you get this reputation?
Oh, I forget. I happened to be standing at a bar one night.
Standing?
Yes, it was early in the evening.
Oh.
Someone said, that Benchley is the world's foremost authority on wit and humor. I forget who said it. It may have been me. I don't know.
It started as a rumor, then.
Yes. I picked it up and sort of blabbed the word around. The thing caught on, and overnight, you might say, I was made.
Well, did you come from a funny family?
Yes, I did. We used to get a lot of laughs around the house just looking at each other. My father was a belly laugh.
Even as you today are no titter. As John Hancock used to put it on occasion, c'est la physiognomie.
What does that mean, Fran?
Well, it loses so much. But tell me, Mr. Benchley, when did you first start to get funny?
My first bright remark, historians tell me, was made at a baby show in Worcester, Massachusetts in 1894.
You recall it?
Verbatim.
Good.
I'd won first prize at the baby show. The judge stooped over my cradle with the medal.
Uh-huh.
I said, you can't pin anything on me. My mother beat you to it.
Rollicking, I must say.
Thank you.
That started you on your career as combination wit and Merry Andrew?
Yes, friend. The rest is history. I rested on my laurels for 20 years.
And what happened?
My spine blossomed. In 1930, I won first prize at the flower show, standing on my hand.
Good for you. Now, since you are an authority, Mr. Benchley, I think our listeners might enjoy having you clear up a few minor things, including your throat. You want to take time?
No, I know. It's okay.
We'd like to have you clear up a few minor things about... you don't think part of your mustache is down there. But I think our listeners might enjoy having you clear up a few minor things about wit and humor that tend to confuse the average person.
Oh, I'll be glad to, Fred. What's on your mind?
Well, first, what is a joke?
A joke? Well, when you hear a man say, did you hear the one about, then he goes,
yes.
Well, what comes between, did you hear the one about, and that's the joke.
Well, that explains everything. Have you any statistics on wit and humor covering 1939?
Well, I did have, but Dr. Gallup borrowed my poll this morning. He was behind in his shinnying or something. But I have a few loose ends in my head.
Oh, I thought those were your sideburns.
No, they're just old loose ends. They've got hair on them.
They ought to come in mighty handy for tugging. Well, what joke, according to your loose ends, was told the most last year?
The Joe Miller survey rates as the outstanding joke of 1939 that one where one Albanian says to the other Albanian, what's the best way to keep a dead fish from smelling?
Does the second Albanian answer?
Unfortunately, yes. The second Albanian says the best way to keep a dead fish from smelling is to cut off its nose.
Where does the... Where does the joke come in?
Well, no one seems to know. I've had a dead fish in my lab all year working on that joke. I cut off the nose.
And does the fish smell?
I doubt it. Everyone else is complaining, but the fish apparently gives no evidence of resenting itself.
Then the outstanding joke of 1939 is founded on a fallacy.
Exactly. cutting off the fish's nose would have no effect on its olfactory reception whatsoever.
But the essence of a joke is still involved.
Yes, the joke is that a fish smells through its gill.
Well concealed, I might say.
Yes, the nose obviously is cut off as a come-on. But that's the trend. That joke is number one on the wit parade.
Now, what is your favorite joke of all time, Mr. Benchley?
Oh, I've said so many funny things, friend.
I know, but your favorite?
Well, I guess it's that one about the little Indian boy who got his foot caught in his papoose bag and couldn't get it out.
What happened?
The boy had to go through life living on his mother.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Excuse me if I don't laugh, Mr. Benchley. We're pressed for time.
I understand quite.
Well, what would you say is the outlook for wit and humor in 1940?
The outlook is pretty drab, Fred. I'm giving up the game. In fact, I'm going into another business. Christmas present consultant.
What is a Christmas present consultant?
Well, if you receive a Christmas present that presents a problem for a nominal sum, I'll solve it for you.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, I got a call this morning up on Central Park West. A man received 20 pounds of putty for Christmas.
Really?
He didn't know what to do with it.
He called you in?
At 3 o'clock this morning.
An emergency. What did you do?
Well, I broke every window in this client's apartment. That 20 pounds of putty was gone in no time.
Pretty soft for you.
Yeah, I sure made an impression there.
Good.
I had another call. A man received a grand piano for Christmas. His apartment was too small. With the piano in it, the man was sleeping in the hall.
What was your solution?
I burned the legs of the piano in the fireplace, stood the piano up on end.
Yes?
Today, that man has a harp and a place to sleep. Well, it's all in a day's work, friend.
Yes, I guess it is. Have you been successful with all of your clients?
I'm infallible, Fred. Why, only yesterday, I was called in by a family on the drive.
What was wrong there?
They were playing bridge on a new table, a Christmas present.
Uh-huh.
They had open house, and a bum walked in and got in the bridge game. They sent for me.
Were you able to get the bum out of the bridge game?
Oh, in no time. I arrived at the house, they dealt me in.
Yes?
I did one no tramp.
Yes?
The bum blushed and withdrew.
Amazing, Mr. Benchley, but this is a seasonal profession. I suppose when Christmas is over, you'll return to your public.
Yes, Fred. As a matter of fact, I'm leaving for Hollywood next week.
Oh, are you going to make another picture?
Well, I've got to. The studio just discovered it has two dishes left on it. Well, bonsoir, Fred.
Bonsoir? What does that mean?
It leaves so much in the translation.
Why, Bob? Well, I get it. Thank you. I get it, but vaguely. And thank you, Mr. Robertson. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lynn Murray, dressed in her best bib and tucker, is here to sing for us Great Day.
When you're down and out, lift up your head and shout, there's gonna be a great day. When skies were dark, came Noah's Ark. Amen. When lions roared, came Daniel's horn.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.